evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington and happy World Radio Day. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, February 13, 2013. Yei River State activists are urging authorities to allow freedom of the press in the state.
Journalists try their level best. They should be given the accessibility to information and then also protections.
And the UN is appealing for funds to help women and children in South Sudan.
We have got an ambitious third country program which begins 2019 to 2021. And this country program looks at five main areas. It looks at the issue of increasing reproductive health services, access to reproductive health services for the population. The second aspect looks at strengthening health system.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Population Fund, or UNFPA, in South Sudan is appealing for more than $18 million to address the special needs of the country's most vulnerable people affected by the conflict. UNFPA says the money will be used to provide 2 million women with reproductive health services and to prevent and raise awareness about the gender-based violence. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Juba.
UNFPA Country Director Wilfred Ochan says more than 40,000 South Sudanese women will likely face pregnancy and childbirth complications this year.
In the 2 million people we are targeting this year, we expect about 280,000 pregnant women that will be able to reach with the resources that will, in case we manage to get these resources that we are appealing for. Of these 280,000, we know that 42,000 of them will face severe complications, either in the pregnancy or in the childbirth within the year. And those may need special care, what we call emergency obstetric care.
Ochan tells South Sudan in Focus that South Sudan has one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the world, estimated at 789 deaths per 100,000 live births, mainly due to constraints in women's access to maternal health care as a result of health facilities that were destroyed during the conflict. Only about 40% of South Sudan's health facilities remained functional. And Ochan says there is not enough skilled bus attendants, awareness of services, and many social-cultural barriers.
We have got an ambitious third country program which begins 2019 to 2021. And this country program looks at five main areas. It looks at the issue of increasing reproductive health services, access to reproductive health services for the population. The second aspect looks at strengthening health system to be able to respond and to bring in accountability for what we want in terms of sexual reproductive health and rights.
Since the fighting erupted in December 2013, Ochan says UNFPA has made progress in providing reproductive health services to crisis-affected populations.
In Minkaman, for example, where we've been providing reproductive health services, we have seen over the last 3 years zero maternal death in the facilities, in the delivery network of the clinic in Malakal where it provides, and in the referral system. And this we've been able to do with our partners like Interchurch Medical Assistance and funding from some of the partners, including Japan and other partners that have been funding us to do some of this work.
Ochan says there are zero maternal deaths in the Malakal POC and the referral system, but quickly adds the country is still far behind on that front.
Every pregnancy carries a risk, okay? Although some might be higher. And we also know that for every expected number of births or pregnancies in a given population, about 15% of those are likely to end up with complications. Now, those complications need a special way of handling them. Maybe an ambulance, maybe a theater where they can be operated from with the doctors and everybody who's there for that. Maybe blood transfusion, maybe instrumental delivery because they can't deliver normally, they need some other support.
Ochan says there are only 700 trained midwives in South Sudan who take care of about 14% of births in the population. Traditional bus attendants take care of the other 86% of bus. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A veteran South Sudanese politician who returned to Juba last year says the September 12 peace deal is holding. Professor Peter Adwok says a lot of people have returned to Juba. He says he feels safe once more in South Sudan.
First, I came here convinced that the only way out for our people is to embrace this peace and use it in order really to recreate their lives. And that's why when I came, the first thing we did was to work in areas where we are more known, the Shuluk area. So I went to Khartoum to meet the Shuluk king and discuss with him this issue of peace and the condition of people in the what they call the IDP camps in White Nile, which is very horrible, and decided that, yes, he should come home. And, of course, if the king is at home in Peshawar, it means all the Shuluks will come back and come and resettle in their homes, as long as there is no fighting and people are, in one way or the other, observing the cessation of hostilities in that area. And then we followed up this with going to Peshawar, which we did last Wednesday, to meet him there after he has come.
Talk to us a little bit about the temperature in Juba, political temperature, when the opposition groups are all in town and they are trying to implement the peace deal. What do you see?
Well, first of all, a lot of people have returned to Juba, which means that this is good. But when we talk of political temperature, up to this point in time, things are going well. And they are putting in place some of the things they have agreed on. But talking about the political temperature, I think it is something that rises and falls with the way things people are doing their things. And I'm sure this time the political temperature is still low, but definitely it will rise. It will definitely rise. One party fails to deliver, and the others will now begin to complain.
What do you see as some of the challenges facing this implementation of the agreement? Because President Kiir, while addressing the SPLM caucus a week ago, said the peace agreement is facing challenges, that there is no money for its implementation.
Maybe the real challenges is the implementation of the cessation of hostility, because we are hearing reports of fighting here and there, especially in the Ye River State and also in Jubek here in southern Bari. You see, these are troubled areas, and of course, and then in Mundri area, and seems to be linked to the movement of the forces of NAS, the forces of Thomas Tshirilo. I think that is the real challenge, because without implementation of cessation of hostilities, then you cannot, even people in these areas will be really disturbed. They will not be able really to live in peace and harmony. This is the main challenge. As for the money, yes, it is a challenge, because certain things need to be put in place. But it is also incumbent on the government, and the government should be able to put some money, at least to make things move, you know, as long as it controls the resources of the country.
Yeah, and you're saying that the king of the Shuluk has returned to Peshawar and you visited him. But I watched him on the South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation. He was breathing fire on the issues of land in Shuluk land.
Yeah, the issue of land is that has been the cause of problem in the Shuluk area. But now, of course, things have already been put in the hands of the government. The government now and I mean the institutions of IGAD have been put into place. So there is no point again for people to be, you know, breathing fire, because until this thing fails, we should be able to wait and see what is going to happen. We have put our case to the TBC, and like all other people.
And what is the case, Dr. Aduok? Can you explain to our listeners who don't understand what is happening in Shuluk land?
What do you mean, what is happening? Well, what happened in the Shuluk land is linked to the decision in 2009 to create a Dinka County in the Shuluk Kingdom. And that precipitated the war in the Shuluk Kingdom in 2009. It ended in 2012, you see. So it has the agreement to end that war has not been implemented because also war erupted again in 2013. So that situation got subsumed in the new civil war which erupted in 2013.
That's Professor Peter Adwok, a senior member of the SPLM-IO. He was speaking to me via WhatsApp from Juba this past hour. Some mobile phone subscribers in Wau Town, the capital of Wau State, say the services provided by Zain and MTN in the two mobile companies operating in the area are horrible. They say it's nearly impossible to communicate by phone. MTN manager admits the company is experiencing technical problems and is working to address the issues. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Wau.
Earlier this year, a group of civil society activists representing more than 100 groups in South Sudan presented a petition to the government about the country's poor phone networks. But the problem persists, and while residents say it has gotten worse in their area, they say for the past 2 months, the poor mobile phone network has affected nearly all aspects of their day-to-day lives. Kenyan national Benson Karanja sells clothes at Aljor Market. He says it is difficult to communicate with his family back home because of the poor network, and it is hurting business because he cannot regularly communicate with his suppliers in Kenya or Dubai in the United Arab Emirates.
Even calling someone from within Wau is not even clear because sometimes you call someone and the phone is telling you that their phone is off, but it's not off. And on top of that, the voices are not clear. You call and then, you know, you hear some disturbance in the network.
30-year-old Nalbino Ugali works for Justice and Peace Commission at the Catholic Diocese of Wau. He says the office buys more than 10 GB of internet bundles from both MTN and Zain, but service is terrible. Ugali says now that the security situation has improved with the signed revitalized peace deal, mobile phone operators should improve their services.
When you want to communicate with one of your friends, one of the family away from your place, it become a problem and some information you cannot be able to deliver at the very time that you want to give. Again, when we are also using internet bundles, sometimes you may even move up and down looking, searching for the network. It keep only loading, downloading, loading, loading. So without really opening the document that you want to open.
24-year-old Bahita Ereneo says she cannot communicate with her relatives due to the poor network. She says she keeps shifting between MTN and Zain in hopes of making connected calls to her loved ones, but it usually does not help. She says these days it is almost impossible to access social media like Facebook and WhatsApp on her phone due to poor network.
Previously I was using Zain, but because of the disturbance, the subscription for the network wasn't really reliable, so I shifted to MTN thinking that it's going to help me. But currently speaking, you subscribe for something like 50 MBs, which doesn't really last. Opening a Facebook for a whole day, you can't really do that.
Stephen James Hakim, manager at MTN headquarters in Juba, admits services have deteriorated in the greater Bahr el Ghazal region due to what he calls technical problems at the main site in Juba. Speaking from a poor line in Juba, Hakim says some MTN sites connected to Wau have not been restored because spare parts were looted during the conflict and never replaced.
We have a backbone from here to Mundri, and we have another backbone from here to Ture, to Mambe, to Meridi, all those areas. This is the backbone taken to the Western Bahr el Ghazal, Northern Bahr el Ghazal, but now it's off. If it is off, it cannot give network to that area because Wau is working on visa now.
Hakim urges MTN customers to be patient, saying technicians are working on connectivity problem. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
From Wau, we take you to Yei, where some residents and civil society activists are using today's World Radio Day as a platform to appeal to authorities to allow press freedom. Yei River State Information Minister says the state is working to improve access to information. Daniel Martin Friday reports for VOA from Yei Town.
Radio Easter, a popular Catholic Church-owned radio station in Yei Town, often promotes peaceful coexistence through its programs such as the Community Hour. Yei residents say they largely rely on radio as a medium of communication, despite the growth of other media, including television and social media on the internet. They say radio plays a bigger role in promoting positive change within societies as compared to other media. Radio Easter presenter and local journalist Aule Ezio describes why his listeners prefer radio compared to other media.
Radio is very important because it reaches the grassroots, and then it is the mode where people can interact freely. That's why people on the ground, based on my assessment as a radio personnel, they trust whatever comes from the radio because they feel whatever is said in the radio is correct, and they have developed that love for radio because radio is always there at their services. So much as presenters or journalists try their level best, they should be given the accessibility to information and then also protection.
Ross Knight, who describes herself as a regular radio listener in Yei Town, explains why she prefers radio over television to access information.
It's very important for me to listen to the radio so that I get information like VOA News. Things are happening in Bentiu, things are happening somewhere else. Immediately, because of radio, you can get those information around Yei, around South Sudan. I think that's important for us as citizens. Also, it is easy for you to afford the what? The radio. Like for television, sometimes you cannot afford.
Paul Waller-Cole, a resident of the Mahad area, says through radio, humanitarian organizations are able to intervene on issues affecting the civil population.
As the article states in the Constitution, that we have the freedom to access information. We see everything that is happening, it is through the radio that we get it, from the state even to the grassroots. So radio, it advocates for peace. And as there is peace within the country, we believe that there is development, because what we are expecting is a positive change to our government of South Sudan. We need to have that freedom for press and to hold people of the South Sudan at large so that they can access the information.
Winnie Clara listens daily to Yei radio stations.
Why I prefer radio is comparing it to newspapers, you have to buy it daily in order to be updated, which is costly. I can actually get balanced and accurate information because we are every day updated. So that information, keeps us aware of what is happening. Sometimes, you may be traumatized, but when somebody consoles you through a song or some messages, it gives you hope and it gives you confidence of the future will be brighter than what is happening now.
Chaplain Anyik, a civil society activist in Yei River State, says promoting access to information through radio helps promote good governance.
It will be able to disseminate information that can bring a lot of change in terms of the peace dissemination, in terms of building the resilience of the people, in terms of what is happening now. I think radio plays a bigger role. So my plea is that at least there should be enough radio stations, like there should be access to information through the radio, especially our communities down there will be able to receive information.
In South Sudan, the government is the biggest consumer of information because most of the policies or programs are created by the government. Yei River State Information Minister Zakaria Doko says the state is working to create a favorable environment for all broadcast journalists, including radio announcers working in the state.
Radio also educates people that may have to do with the socio-political development, economic development. We transmit through radio so that our people participate actively, and we want the press to be free, and we also work to protect our press persons so that they have that freedom to report accurately and without bias.
This year, World Radio Day is being celebrated under the theme Dialogue, Tolerance, and Peace. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a hospital is burned down in Cameroon. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you advise someone who is struggling in life?
To just keep going, life is full of ups and downs. So it's the way you're able to maneuver, is the way you're able to, because life will give you what you accept. So if you are defeated and you feel you are defeated, then that's all.
He or she should not give up, because once you struggle, you never know one time you can achieve what you want.
Not to give up so easily, because if you want to succeed in life and you give up on something that you want to do so easily, there is no way you can go forward and succeed in whatever you're doing.
I'll tell him not to watch his present situation now, but to still forge ahead and push towards his goal. He should also have a goal and then work towards it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And now we turn to Cameroon, where armed men burned down a hospital in the town of Kumba this week, forcing patients and medical staff to flee for their lives. Cameroon's government blames the attack on separatists demanding independence for Cameroon's English-speaking regions. The country's National Order of Doctors has condemned the attack as barbaric. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Kumba.
It was quiet Tuesday at the Kumba District Hospital in the southwest region of Cameroon. On a normal day, the hospital cares for hundreds of patients and pregnant women. But none were here today, one day after the attack that reduced most of the buildings to ashes. Nurse Rosemary Kimbi says the hospital complied with government orders to discharge 90% of the patients.
The patients that were a little bit better, we send them home. Women who delivered, we send them back home. We took the instruction that the government gave that we should see that serious cases should be dispatched to different hospitals around. I just pray that my colleagues who are out, that they ran away from the incident, they should come back, since government said they are assuring them of their security.
About 80% of the staff did not report for work Tuesday. 14-year-old Marvelous Manka, whose mother is being treated for cancer, says her mother may die because their doctor is absent and there is no one to attend to them. She says they have been asked to go to another specialist hospital in the neighboring town of Boya.
All the roads are blocked and there's no one moving in town. I just pray to God that the situation to change and everything to come back. God should just help for this strike to stop.
The government of Cameroon says at least 20 armed separatists attacked and set fire to the hospital in the early hours of Monday. It says 4 people, including 2 patients, were killed. Local newspapers report that the separatists may have been angry that the hospital was treating government troops wounded in the separatist war and disclosing the identities of armed fighters to the military. Titani Ekwe, president of the Cameroon Medical Council, denies the accusations.
Ça nous laisse véritablement sans voix. L'Ordre national des médecins du Cameroun.
He says the National Order of Cameroon Doctors and all medical staff in Cameroon are speechless because they have always respected neutrality in the conflict between the Cameroon military and armed groups. He says when a priceless service to humanity like healthcare delivery and a hospital are attacked and torched for whatever reason, the medical staff can only be shocked and expect justice to take its course. On social media, the separatists insisted that the hospital was torched by Cameroon's military to discredit them and tarnish their image. Renewed fighting erupted in Cameroon's 2 English-speaking regions this month after armed separatists began what they call a 10-day lockdown, banning many activities in the war-torn Anglophone regions through February 14. Cameroon's unrest began in November 2016 when English-speaking teachers and lawyers demonstrated against the growing dominance of French in the officially bilingual country. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Kumba, Southwestern Cameroon.
From Cameroon, we move to Burundi, where women have been speaking about the role they play in peace building during the country's ethnic violence that took place in the 1990s, during which more than 300,000 people were killed. Moses Havyarimana visited the community that was most affected by the violence.
This is Mutakura, located in the outskirts of Bujumbura. Majority of the Hutu ethnic group, which is considered to be more than 80% of the population of the country, lived here. But during the 1994 ethnic violence, most of the men here joined a rebellion to oust the Tutsi-led government. Women became vulnerable as they were left behind with children in the middle of the crisis. Mahera Georgette, also known as the General because of her resilience, says that she helped reuniting the local communities through community work. She says she formed an association of women and started building demolished houses of Hutu living in Chibitoki and houses of the Tutsi who lived in Mutakura. Mahera says, as a woman, she reunited Burundians through social activities and hided several Tutsis from being killed in the Hutu-dominated Mutakura. Although more than 80% of the Burundians are Hutu, the political power used to belong to the minority Tutsi. The social differences and ethnic tensions between the Tutsi and the Hutu peoples led to the political unrest in the country, as Hutus were physically identified by large and short nose, while the Tutsis have long pointed nose. Ndayisenga Mariam is a former rebel turned peace advocate.
Mimi ndo kitu kisababisha mimi naenda mustuni.
She says that she joined a rebel group with her husband in 1993 after the assassination of President Melchior Ndadaye, the first democratically elected Hutu president. Mariam says that after years in the bush, she realized war was not the solution, but rather advocate for peace and uniting Burundians through her association that sensitized victims and casualties of the conflict. A 136-page book of the Burundi's unsung heroes was launched with mostly women who played a critical role in the peace building of the country, telling their stories and the challenges they faced during the bloody ethnic conflict. Ines Ininahazwe is a Burundian citizen and a feminist.
I was amazed, impressed when I read the book. I have heard about unsung heroes. Leaders, women from rural areas, contributed a lot for reconciliation of their communities. And it's most of the women who did not go to school and who lost their relatives. They are resilient women.
Burundi is steadily gaining relative stability after the 2015 political crisis, which was feared to turn into an ethnic crisis. Both Hutus and Tutsis in Burundi live together, and the intermarriages have continued in large numbers, which wasn't the case a few decades ago. Burundi formed a Truth and Reconciliation Commission in order to strengthen a national cohesion and consider the ethnic divisions as history in the country. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Voila. That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Yangada Gadia by M.E.J. Yore. I'm John Tanza, and thank you for joining us on this World Radio Day. Join us again tomorrow evening for another exciting edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Chai manga demo kito na bendo ni gene.